If there is a state tax on liquor, how the hell do I not get a larger state refund? It makes no sense.
David, we're going again.
Okay.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to another week of Hoops HD Report. First day of February, exactly 1 month away from the start of conference tournaments, which begin on March 1st. Very excited about that. I'm your host, Chad Sherwood. Joining us is a slightly smaller crowd than normal, but first of all, John Stalica back with us again. John, how are you doing there?
I'm doing quite well, Chad. Note to David, I do taxes, but I don't have anything to do with alcohol purchases, so I'm afraid I can't help you there.
Shouldn't it be a write-off?
David Griggs back with us again, voted the number one college basketball puppet on the internet. David, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. And I mean, yes, the number one. We ran a Twitter poll, and I was voted number one.
In fact, you're the only candidate for some reason. That came out of Iowa, where the caucus is going on right now as we speak.
Yeah.
And David Griggs apparently has won a couple of the counties, from what I understand.
Number one.
But
obviously not dry counties.
President, wouldn't be the first time.
Anyhow, let's get right into it here. This is our Hoops HD report, where we talk about all the news and goings on in college basketball, talk about what's going on in all the major conferences, discuss what games have occurred over the last week or so. But we want to start with the top 25 poll. And for the first time, David, since I believe 1986, neither Duke's men's nor women's team is in the top 25 at the moment. Where were you back in 1986?
It was the 80s. It was a fabulous time. I know you were going to believe this. I was pretty drunk most of the time.
Well, at least it was only alcohol. There's a lot more going on in the 80s than just that.
Yeah.
But Duke dropping out of the top 25. John, is Duke in trouble here?
I don't think they're in trouble as far as making the field, but I definitely wouldn't count on them playing any of their games in Raleigh this March.
Is that what they're going for, though? Like, are they trying to fall far enough down to the seed list that they get placed in Raleigh?
Well, that could be it. I actually came very close to getting them into Raleigh. It was just a bracketing rule that kept them out of Raleigh in my bracket that I posted today. Of course, you both took a great exception to the fact that I put them all the way down on the 12 line.
Well, I guess we'll get to that when we get to the ACC. But, yeah, I mean, I know they've lost 4 out of 5. I know they're out of the rankings. But I was surprised to see you drop them that much.
Chad and I did have a discussion about Gonzaga possibly dropping down to the 12 or 13, depending on how things lay out. So do they still get to play in Spokane under that scenario?
Not if it's the 13, do they?
On the 13 line, that would be a matchup with the 4 seed, and that would put the 4 seed at a home court disadvantage.
Yeah.
Even if it was Washington State, who couldn't be there anyhow, but because they'll never make the field, especially as a 4 seed. But as far as Duke goes, out of the top 25, we will get to them in a bit here. But last week, after we were done with our Hoops HD report, I kind of got chastised a little bit for kind of rushing through the Atlantic 10. We really kind of been dealing with them at the end of the show most weeks, and wanted to lead off the show this week with the A-10, show a little A-10 love out there, and especially this Dayton team. And David, this Dayton team is playing pretty damn good right now, I'd have to say.
They are. They're into the polls. They're 18-3. They've won, I believe, is it 11 of their last 12? The only loss, really inexplicable, and it was so bad that you almost just wondered if they were going to blow it. It was a road loss at LaSalle, but I think the way they've been playing, you can just chalk that up as a toe stub. They've done more than enough to offset that. Another loss, a very close loss at home to Chattanooga, a pretty good Chattanooga team that, I mean, we've discussed on Under the Radar. Not a lot of great wins. That's the thing, but they have a lot of decent wins. Duquesne, winning at Duquesne. Duquesne's not an NCAA tournament team, but Duquesne has played very well at home this year. They deserve credit for that. The win at St. Bonaventure, again, not a tournament team. They played well at home this year. Fordham, surprisingly, is not a sub-300 team that looks like they would struggle to finish in the top half of the Northeast. They're actually halfway decent this year, especially at home. They went out there and got a win. They go to St. Joseph's. That's a chance to really put them up there. And to Richmond, again, not a tournament team, but a team that typically plays well at home. And then the finale against VCU, who's also playing very, very well. I think VCU, although their paper isn't anywhere near as good as Dayton, is currently looking the best in the A-10. But Dayton's having a tremendous season, and it's going kind of unnoticed, not just by us, but by everyone. They did crack the rankings this week. And why is that, Chad? Is it that the A-10 is just buried on premium networks and everybody kind of forgets about them, or what? Like,
that may be part of it, but you know, I'll tell you that going back to that LaSalle game, that's what I wanted to address, because actually our colleague Lee Delvecchio and I were both there at the LaSalle game that Dayton lost, and really it was just a completely different team than the team I've seen over the last few weeks there. I thought that LaSalle really controlled that game. They decided to run a slowdown, and I mean, I think Archie Miller is one of the best coaches in the country for what he's done the last few years. He got completely outcoached by Dr. John Giannini in that game, and it was, you know, I barely remembered until the game was almost over that Scoochie Smith and Dyshawn Pierre even were playing for Dayton. That's how much he took their stars out of the game. So I think that there was kind of a game plan maybe even laid out there how to beat Dayton, and what's maybe impressed me the most is the fact that they then ran off six fairly convincing wins in a row since then and really corrected whatever went wrong in that game. But
including GW and Davidson.
Yeah. Including a home win over GW, the win over Davidson, and now they've got actually five of their next eight on the road here, including the trip to Rhode Island, a trip to St. Joe's. So we're going to find out a little bit, although, like you said, the big game is that March 5th regular season finale at home against VCU.
Yeah. But some other good teams in this league, I think we've got at least two others, well, maybe just two others, inside the bubble as well, and maybe working their way up to the first ballot. I didn't see where you had VCU. Well, I saw, but where was VCU in your bracket today, John?
Where was VCU in my bracket? Give me half a second. I'll give you that information. I had VCU in as an 8 seed. I Dayton up in the 5 line. That's how well I'm impressed with Dayton. VCU I have in there at the 8 line. I had St. Joe's at the very top of my 9 line. They were almost right next to each other in my field. I know that VCU did beat went at St. Joe's head to head, but VCU hasn't lost since conference play began, and has looked as good as anybody in the conference at the moment.
They not only won at St. Joe's, they also did some very unspeakable things to Davidson last Friday night. They got off to a very fast start, even though Davidson did make a game of it. But I think that's the Wildcats have lost at home all year.
Yeah, Davidson, it is. I've been really, really underwhelmed by Davidson. I thought they'd be much better this year. And again, they loaded up on cupcake. They need to stop doing that. I mean, they basically give themselves no advantages and take a pass on out of conference. Wins, but Davidson just doesn't really have it this year, but they've been very strong at home. But good God, I mean, VCU just went in there and just pile drove them.
Well, John, what about this St. Joe's team? You know, I think I like them. I think the biggest criticism you have them, if you look at the St. Joe's resume, is they really seem to be lacking that key win. In fact, they have zero top 50 wins. They do have a win at Temple and a home win over Princeton. What I really like about them is the fact you only got 3 losses right now and only 1 loss in conference play. But I understand there could be some criticism of them being up there with no top 50 wins and really no wins against anybody that would be in the field right now.
They don't have any spectacular wins, but they have 6 games that I would consider decent wins. You mentioned Temple and Princeton. I would include the sweep against Rhode Island. They also won at Richmond, and also a neutral court game against Virginia Tech back in December. Their total record away from home is 9-1. 9-1. That's very impressive.
Yeah.
It's 9-1, but again, you've got to beat somebody that's in the field, and which means that they have Dayton at home on February 17th. They've already played VCU. They're not going to play VCU again, so they may need that Dayton win. or they may need to find a way into the A-10 finals. If they, especially if they slip again in if they slip up in some of these remaining games, otherwise there is an argument that can be made. You haven't beaten anybody in the field. Why should you be in it?
Yeah, but, I mean, we've seen teams get at larges and get way inside the bubble that didn't have any wins. It is rare, but I think Nevada did it 1 year. Now, granted, they were ranked in the top 10, and they were seeded 7th. But what was George Washington? They didn't beat a single team 1 year and got in.
I just think that if you look at the if you look too closely at this resume and you get past the only three losses, which I really like, you know, I've got them seated as a 9. I could see them going to Dayton in the first 4 game.
Now, David is thinking of 2006 when George Washington ran the table in the regular season for the A-10, but actually lost their first A-10 tournament game in Cincinnati against Temple.
Well, David, let me throw it over here. One other team, George Washington. Our colleague John Titel actually still had them in his field as of this past week. I don't agree with him. I don't think you agree with him either, but can GW get back in the mix here?
Well, they need a really, really strong finish. I mean, yeah, their next two, home against Davidson, that's not going to be good. But if they go to VCU and win, like Davidson, VCU, Joe's at St. Bonaventure, they win all 4 of those, yeah, they're back in it. Now, the question is, are they good enough to do that? And I think the answer to that is no, they're not. They're really not.
Right, they do have St. Joe's at home, and they have VCU home and away still to go. They are, they're done with Dayton. They already played them once. They're not going to play them again unless they mean the A-10 tournament. But, I mean, at least when you look at the GW profile, you've got the two wins, quality wins at the top, Virginia and Seton Hall. But unlike St. Joe's, they have the ugly on the bottom, losing at DePaul, losing at St. Louis. Even a home loss to Richmond is not looking that pretty right now.
Yeah. Richmond's been pitiful on the road. So.
And they didn't look that great at George Mason yesterday, though they did pick up the win.
No. But, I mean, and again, George Mason's the kind of place you can go have the worst game of the season and still win. So,
But let's turn away from the A-10 for a bit here and talk about what is, I think, the consensus top conference in the country, at least in terms of the top teams in it, and that's the Big 12. This past weekend, we had the Big 12 SEC Challenge. I asked both of you and Lee Delvecchio last week if the SEC had any chance to win more than 3 games, and you all said no, and sure enough, the SEC got exactly the 3 wins and probably were lucky to get that. I was not shocked that the Big 12 pretty much dominated the challenge. Probably the biggest shock was how well Kentucky played against Kansas, though.
Yeah, it really was. Kentucky had not been impressive in true road games. They had moments. They went to Alabama and crushed them. But losing at Auburn, not even an NIT team, losing at LSU, right now, not looking in the field, but losing badly. To go to Kansas, a place where national champions would struggle to win on the road at Kansas, and to take them to overtime, and to come out in a very hostile environment. I was impressed with how they began the game. I was impressed with how they closed the half. I was impressed with how every time momentum was shifting towards Kansas in a huge, huge way, they would hit a big basket or make a big defensive stop. I was impressed with how they got into foul trouble, lost some key players, but still made adjustments. I was surprised and impressed with how well Kentucky played. Hands down their best showing of the year, even though it was a loss, ironically. But, wow, if Kentucky plays like that the rest of the way, they won't lose in going into the NCAA tournament.
Texas A&M and Florida are the two reasons the SEC did not get completely humiliated this weekend, and those were also both teams that were in real need of signature wins. A&M gets a nice win against Iowa State, who's going to be likely a protected seed. But Florida, they got the biggest win by far for the SEC. I mean, part of it came because West Virginia was, I guess you could say, stomping over the Gator logo pregame, which is never a good idea.
A very bad idea.
Obviously, West Virginia did not learn their lesson from last year when they were calling out Kentucky before their Sweet 16 game against the Wildcats.
Yeah, West Virginia, and this is kind of a staple of Huggins teams, they like to kind of get inside your head. that doesn't work for everyone. I mean, sometimes the trash talking actually makes the other team play better. They need to be more selective about how they go about that, because Florida just came out. I mean, it was just a mauling.
Yeah, and West Virginia, with a real tough stretch ahead this week, they're going to be playing tomorrow night at Iowa State. This weekend they host Baylor. Next week, next Tuesday night, they're at Kansas. So I think we're going to learn a lot about this West Virginia team and whether or not they can rebound from – really, they just were not in that game at all against Florida.
No. In a little congratulations to Mike White here. He did have a win at Oklahoma. I want to say it was 2 or 3 years ago, but I believe this is the first time. It's the highest-ranked team he's ever beaten. And Mike White, really good coach. Congrats to him.
Yes. Turning back to the Big 12, the other game of the weekend, I guess, was this Oklahoma-LSU game. Buddy Hield versus Ben Simmons pretty much lived up to all the hype around it, more so than I thought it would. I thought Oklahoma would go in there and roll, but, they do get the win on the buzzer beater, and still the best team in the country, David, by far.
I think so. And what's crazy, it was a very busy Saturday afternoon and evening, particularly in the afternoon. I wasn't really watching this game in the first half. I was kind of watching the score, but there was other games going on. So, by the time I got to it, LSU had a double-digit lead in the second half, and I'm just like, well, we're going to see what Oklahoma is made of. I was surprised that LSU jumped on them the way that they did. I know it was a showcase for them. I know whenever you host number one, it's a big deal for the fans. The atmosphere is real suffocating, but Oklahoma, I thought, would be used to that now. But credit Oklahoma for being down double digits on the road against a good team and coming back and winning. Wow.
Pretty late in the second half, too.
Yeah.
And, John, you pointed this out. Oklahoma now has 5 road games left. 3 of them are their at Kansas State, at Texas Tech, at TCU games. The other 2 at West Virginia and at Texas. They may have the easiest road left in the Big 12 of anybody.
Yeah.
Which is really impressive given the fact that they've gone through the toughest part with only the losses at Kansas and at Iowa State.
Yeah, but the only real hard game they have remaining is going to be West Virginia. Contrast that to Iowa State, who's probably going to have the hardest road left.
Well, Kansas at home is not exactly a cakewalk either.
What I'm saying is Iowa State still has to play West Virginia twice. They've got to go to Kansas. They've got to go to Baylor. They've got to go to a real desperate Texas Tech team, and they still have to host Texas as well.
Real desperate Texas Tech team. Is that a way to describe them, David?
They can be as desperate as they want. I think it's a Texas Tech team that isn't quite there yet. What is this? 7 out of 8 they've lost, and including at Arkansas. I realize Arkansas is a home court hero. It's hard to win there, but just not getting it done, Texas Tech.
One other team, I want to briefly mention Baylor. They had one of the easiest matchups of the SEC Big 12 challenge, beating Georgia by 10 points at home. A little bit of trouble right now as we record this. They're down 5 to Texas. We're just going to keeping an eye on that. But this Baylor team, other than the home loss to Oklahoma, has played really well since the beginning of January, pretty much. And, can't fault them for losing to Oklahoma.
Right. Getting the win at Iowa State, massive. Win at Texas Tech, noteworthy. Went to Oklahoma State and won. Not always easy to do. Some real big wins, although struggling tonight. But I wanted to just mention, too, how well Texas has been playing these past couple weeks. They went to Kansas. They hung in there. I know they didn't get the win, but they were way more competitive than I thought they would be. Prior to that, they'd won 3 in a row, including a win at West Virginia. Blasted Vanderbilt. That's a pastime that's not hard to do anymore. But in tonight, winning at Baylor, is Texas, when you looked at them in November and December, especially when you looked at them away from home, are they one of the more improved teams as the season has gone along?
Texas would be 6-3 if they wind up winning tonight. That is certainly not something I would be expecting.
Yeah.
And I don't think even our diehard resident Texas fan on the email thread would have expected that result so far.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you look at Texas, three of their six losses were all back in November. Washington, Texas A&M, and Michigan. Since January, yeah, questionable losses at Texas Tech and at TCU at the very start of Big 12 play. But since then, they really have. They have, over their last six games, looked as good as anybody in the conference other than Oklahoma.
Well, other than Oklahoma, yeah.
And that may be all that Texas Tech has their hat to hang on at this point, besides Little Rock.
Let's kind of roll from there into, you know, Texas. Their SEC Big 12 challenge game was a dominating home win over Vanderbilt. David, are we done talking about Vanderbilt at this point? Let's kind of look at some of these other SEC teams.
I was done with them very, very shortly after conference play started. Coming on, yeah. I mean, I guess are we going into the SEC next?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Can I make a just comment? I kind of alluded to this last week. The SEC Big 12 Challenge. I mean, I thought one of the points of these conference challenges, and perhaps especially the hardwood classic between the Big 12 and what was then the Pac-10, was to put a brighter spotlight on college basketball in November and December, when there were otherwise just not marquee or showcase games, and it worked. Like, they went from half-empty arenas for that one hardwood classic game to selling out or coming close to it. This kind of came full circle. Instead of playing it at a time when the spotlight on college basketball wasn't very bright, they moved it to now so the event would get more attention. Would it make more sense? I'm a big fan of more showcase games in November and December. As good as this was this past week, I think I like these earlier in the year more.
Well, I'll tell you that I thought that, and maybe it's just because we had two incredible games and the two headline games of the challenge.
Yeah.
I think this was a huge success, actually. And I thought it was great to see this cross-divisional rivalries, cross-conference games here at the end of January, in February. You know, I was a huge fan of the Bracket Busters. That was the last time we had, you know, and that was, you know, interconference games. Same thing here. I wouldn't be upset if they wanted to put aside the last Saturday in January, not only for the SEC Big 12, but also do a Pac-12 ACC challenge, do a Big East, Big Ten, you know, throw a few more of these challenges in there. And even if it means, hey, we start the conference season a week earlier before all the kids are still away.
That would be the other thing, because my thing is, like, if the idea is to put more of a spotlight on the November-December period of the season, one way to do it is to have these challenges now, but have conference games, at least one or two weeks of conference games in November or December. I would be a huge proponent of that.
And we know, I mean, one of the problems here is always that teams don't really want to schedule a key home game during the semester break.
Yeah.
Because you're not going to have the students there.
Right.
And I understand that over the Christmas break, you're going to want to schedule, you know, Western Illinois and Southeastern Louisiana and all those teams.
Or your neutral floor games, like
what
we see a lot of over Christmas.
But I don't think he said schedule them over a semester break, or certainly not during semester exams, but possibly do it the first week of December after everyone is back from Thanksgiving break.
But the problem with that is now if you're doing it that weekend, you're putting it up against football.
Yeah, well, I mean, just do it either during the week or Friday when you're not playing football.
You have to do it either during the week. You have to do something on a Sunday, which means BYU can't play. But one other thing in the SEC, John. Let me ask you this question here. I'm kind of looking at the SEC as almost solidifying itself as exactly a 4-team league here with A&M, South Carolina, Kentucky, and Florida at this point. Do you think anybody else can sneak in here?
I still think it can happen through the SEC tournament and auto bid, but
okay. Well, yeah. Well, I mean, the auto bid always could happen, but I mean, as an at-large,
I wouldn't write LSU or Vanderbilt off completely yet. But I don't know if that's because one of them is going to finally achieve enough, or whether one of those teams is going to be a surprise pick like UCLA was last year, especially if they have a high enough of a KenPom or other tempo rating that the committee uses.
This is a hugely important stretch for LSU. getting the win against Oklahoma would have helped immensely, but they go to Auburn, which is a winnable road game that they need to win. Mississippi State is a home win. But the next two, South Carolina, Texas A&M, I think if they get the next four, and I think they probably need all four of them, then you're talking being on the bubble. But when you're on the outside looking in, you have to do a lot. I think they need the next four.
Yeah, and normally you wouldn't say, hey, you've got to beat the top two teams in the conference in back-to-back days.
Yeah.
But when you're this far behind, yes, exactly, that's exactly what you need to do.
Yeah.
Although that's not a bad segue for a couple of huge spotlight games that are coming up this week in the SEC. One is going to be between Kentucky and Florida. That's suddenly going to be more important. But let's not forget South Carolina going to Texas A&M this weekend. That was that's one we didn't have on our radars at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, that could be a fun game. I'm still not convinced that South Carolina really is all that good. They've got they're sitting here with seven top 100 wins.
It's gonna make Frank angry.
But they really kind of it's kind of what I was saying about St. Joe's. They haven't beaten anybody that's clearly going to be in the field. I mean, maybe Hofstra wins the Colonial, and that's their best win. So it's the same thing here. You know, have they beaten anybody that's clearly in the field? And I don't think they have.
But here's a big difference between South Carolina and St. Joe's. The Hawks have already used one of their tries against VCU and came up empty. But the Gamecocks, they're going to have their chances against Florida, Kentucky, Texas A&M.
Yeah, but you look at it. Actually, if you look at their schedule, South Carolina pretty much has not played anybody that is clearly in the field at this. Has not played anybody that is clearly in the field. You know, they have played Hofstra. They have played at Clemson. I apologize. That was a good win, and we're going to get to Clemson here in a few minutes. But, I mean, it's amazing that we're here in February with an SEC team that hasn't played a team that's clearly in the field yet. It's almost it's pretty impressive that you could pull that off, actually. So congrats to Angry Frank for finding a way to do that.
Right.
226 strength of schedule right now. That's not good.
Ooh, I didn't realize. Ooh, that is low. Yeah, that is low.
Let's take a quick look over. Let's start another conference.
That's without playing Missouri.
Yeah, oh God.
We're gonna get to a few other conferences in a minute, but let's get to skip over to the Pac-12. Right now, and we're also gonna talk about the ACC in a few moments here. But over the past several weeks, year, month, we've been talking about the Pac-12 as being an up to a 10-team league. Most teams in of any conference. I think that's all starting to fall apart over the past couple of weeks. Only had seven Pac-12 teams in the bracket I did today, and two of them, Washington and Stanford, were both my first four, and I really held my nose at putting Stanford in, I'll tell you.
Well, only seven. Well, I mean, again, we had 10 teams in, but we had four or five hovering around the bubble. Right. And, I mean, that was a point we also made, is that it's not going to stay like this. When you have that many bubble teams all set up to play each other, some are going to distance themselves and land inside, and others are going to fall outside. I mean, it isn't the first time we've seen a lot of teams from a conference in a good position, but not. I mean, whenever you throw the ball up, someone's going to lose. And
Yeah. I was going to say, teams like Oregon, Utah, and even Washington, they're separating themselves in the right direction. Arizona State and Washington State are separating themselves in the wrong direction. It's teams like Cal, UCLA, and Stanford. Where are they going to go in February?
Well, John, I'm not on the Washington bandwagon the way you have been. I still just don't see it there in the profile the way you have seen it. Yes, they beat Texas on a neutral court, USC and Colorado at home. They swept UCLA, who is not really looking like a clear tournament team. They lost to Gonzaga, who may not be in the field. They lost home games to Oakland and Santa Barbara. And want to talk, I just don't see the Washington as really moving up there as far as you see them moving up there at this point. I'll put it that way.
Sure, I have to hold my nose at the losses to Oakland and UCSB, but still some decent wins, including a winning record on the road against the Pac-12, which is pretty good. And they're still 5-4 overall away from home, so it does separate themselves a little bit from other bubble teams for now.
I still think they have some work to do if they want to land inside. Cal was one of the teams that, I think they were ranked in the top 15 at one point this season, which just kind of goes to show you how quickly you forget some of the teams that were really big. But One True Road, they've got Washington State, Wazoo, Arizona, and Arizona State. I think they need three of those to even be close.
Let me just ask you, David, about the other end of the Pac-12, the top end of it.
Oh, well, and, who wants to talk about that?
Okay. And have you finally come on board with my Oregon Ducks, who now we're sitting here with 7 top 50 wins, 3 of which are away from home, 5 more top 100 wins, including 1 away from home last night, going in and pretty much dismantling the curtain of distraction? I think they only missed one free throw the entire second half against the curtain even. Are you sold? Are you on board?
Well, I would be if you hadn't been big on them.
Okay.
In all seriousness, this is my biggest complaint about them was they just hadn't done anything on the road. They stayed at home way too much, lost to UNLV, lost at Boise, and you're just like, well, and then lost at Oregon State. So that was not a good sample size of road records, but since then, the win at Utah was huge. They really played well out at Colorado, had a chance to win that game. And then coming off of the 2 Arizona wins, yes, not only am I think they're a protected seed, and I think that they have looked better than anyone else in this league.
Arizona had won 49 straight at home, but that came to a sudden and swift end against Oregon, so they are definitely going to get points for that from the committee this March.
Yeah.
John, he said that Oregon is clearly the top team. Do you want to make a case that Utah is right there with them or very close to them at least?
They're close, but I'm still going to go with Oregon at the very top right now. I mean, Utah's best win, it still came out of conference against Duke in Madison Square Garden, which is that's still as good as a road game. But that win against Colorado is also going to be a unique one because that's the only one the Buffs have lost at home. And they also won at Washington, which I would personally value as well.
Oregon did have a notable win when you compare, like, good wins that Oregon's had and good wins that Utah has had. Oregon won at Utah by 18. So there's that, Chad. Just pointing that out.
I won that one. You won that one, but the two teams will rematch in Oregon coming up on this weekend. So huge game this weekend, Utah at Oregon. So keep an eye out for that one. Let's go over to the ACC next, because I mentioned that that the Pac-12, I had up to 10 teams in, dropped down to 7. My bracket this week, I had 10 ACC teams in, which kind of surprised me when I did the final count at the end.
I didn't realize that.
But let me start with the team that got them to the 10, and that's this Clemson team, David. Sitting here with a sub 80 RPI, which normally does not get you in the field, but on the other hand, 6 top 50 wins, including, and 3 of them are top 25 wins.
Yeah, there is one glaring, gaping. Well, the RPI is one if you look at it categorically, but again, we say not to do that. But they have one, in my opinion, major deficiency, and if they fix this, the RPI will get fixed as well. They have one true road win. And that's it. Now,
I was going to say the other problem that they need to fix is the fact that their non-conference strength of schedule is 338 in the nation. But
yeah, they need to get to work on that. I mean, those teams that they played need to start playing. How is that possible?
That road win was against Syracuse. It wasn't a minnow like NC State or Wake Forest. So right. I give them credit for that.
Yeah, they deserve credit. You know, they led Minnesota for most of the game, didn't hold on. We're right in there with South Carolina for most of the game, didn't hold on. Blasted by Georgia, and they've been competitive on the road. You know, they played really well at Virginia. They won at Syracuse. I didn't think they played that badly against North Carolina, but I mean, their next two, they really – if they beat Wake and Virginia Tech, these are winnable road games, and I think they need both of them. Their RPI will, I mean, because again, you got to keep in mind the weighted for winning on the road. Their RPI will improve probably to the 70s and maybe even into the 60s. They'll have three road wins instead of one. And then they're back home with Notre Dame, Georgia Tech, Boston College. Two of those are very winnable. So even though Clemson is categorically off right now due to just one road win and an RPI in the 80s, the way they've been playing, I think they're going to get there. And I had no problem with you taking them.
Yeah,
and Boston College is winnable?
I think at home against Boston College is winnable.
Yeah. When you look at the Clemson profile, you got those six top 50 wins. The kind of the strange thing about it, they don't have another win within the top 150 other than those six top 50 wins. So, you know, every other win game they've won has been RPI 200+, and it's very strange to see nobody in either the 50-1 to 100 spot or the 101 to 150 category. And well, they have one loss in that category. They only played one team between 51 and 150, and that was a loss at Georgia. So, very strange.
That's what Joby would call poison.
Obviously, the other big story in the ACC is a game that we just watched tonight before we started. John, North Carolina going to Louisville, and Louisville finally picking up a true quality win, albeit at home.
Yeah, but that's still a win they badly needed.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't matter if it's home, away, neutral. A top five win is still going to be a top five win. But at the same time, you also have to wonder about Carolina. That's certainly going to douse any talk that they should be overall number one, but I still think they're a one seed caliber team for the time being.
Yeah, I would have been far more convinced. I agree with John that they're one seed caliber, but they have to get at least one big road win. Now, I think they will, but if they don't, then I mean if they, you know, Duke, Notre Dame, Pitt, Miami. I mean, if they lose all of those, and then Virginia, they're not getting up on the one line. They have to beat a ranked team on the road.
I would agree with that completely. You know, they still have they're probably a two seed at the moment because Villanova probably moves into the one line if that's the team that you had as a two seed heading into this. But what about this Virginia team? David, starting to play a little bit better here, having won four straight, including doing what North Carolina could not do, not only winning at Louisville, but crushing them.
Yeah, ever since, for the first 39 minutes and 39 seconds of the game at Wake Forest, Virginia looked like they always have on the road, and that was not impressive. For the last 40 minutes and 21 seconds on the road, they've looked amazing.
It was an amazing 21 seconds at Wake Forest. But, you know, it's almost like they won that, and, like, it was – when they came out against Louisville, it was like, hey, we could beat anybody, now we're invincible, and good for them.
Yeah. Defensively, Louisville has always struggled against the pack line. I don't know – it's just a bad matchup for them. It's been that way for years. But this was especially – I mean, I remember when it was 42-21 thinking that if Virginia failed to score the rest of the game, they would still beat Louisville. They just could not get anything going. And, it's that kind of defense that they're always going to struggle against, and they always have. But, wow, to go in there and just blast Louisville the way that they did – and now they're off and running. They've got Boston College next. They should win that one.
This was the first time since prior to the Louisville game last year where Virginia really looked like one of the country's elite teams. It was their finale last year at Louisville where they lost and somewhat began their downward spiral away from home. But for the time being, it looks like they've corrected that big time.
Well, John, I know I had 10 teams in. There was an 11th team that I know you wanted to talk about, and NC State this weekend had a huge home win over Miami. Is this just a team that's going to play a role as spoiler, or do you think that they can actually make a run at a tournament bid here?
They're not looking very good right now at Florida State. But
okay, I didn't have that score up. Okay.
I'll say this. They're like VD. I mean, you think it's gone away, but you just can't.
I
Right. Yes. NC State was just compared to a venereal disease. Tobacco Road, Duke in North Carolina. They're driving off the road right now. What a comment.
I'm done. Go ahead. You guys take it from here.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, my apologies, because I know this is a family show.
What? No, it's not. No family is sitting on the couch watching this.
Oh God. Give me a second here. David, you can host for a minute.
Right. Yeah. But I don't know. I mean, prior to I think that was more of an anomaly, and I think it was more Miami just playing poorly, but they'd lost 7 of 8 prior to that game. It would have to be they'd have to go to Duke and win that and infect them, and then they've got Wake Forest, which I just don't think it's going to happen.
Okay, right. let's move on to some other venereal diseases.
Wow.
Here. And I think right on that note, let's turn off the American. Where, how about this Houston VD?
Speaking of venereal disease.
As we speak, they just knocked off SMU at home, giving Larry Brown's team their second loss of the season.
Yeah.
John, I know you were high on Temple after they beat SMU. Are you putting Houston in your field now, too?
I'll at least put Houston back in the discussion, but I'm not going to be putting them close to the field yet. Let's not forget, Houston also lost to South Florida at home. But Temple, yeah, they did do something the Surgeon General would not recommend by losing to East Carolina, but at least they did bounce back against South Florida on the road, which I'm sure Mick Cronin can attest is a hard game to win, but
they win that East Carolina game. I mean, prior to that game, I was really starting to like this Temple team. And, God, that just – I mean, it just cracks your teeth. I mean, and no ointment can help. The pores anyway. But they have the home game against Nova coming up. If they win out, which would mean beating Villanova, I think they go.
Yeah, well, let's – what about in the American? I know we kind of think – I probably assume we all would have both Cincinnati and UConn in, even with UConn's loss to Cincinnati over last week. But yeah. I've seen some of the other bracketologists out there having Tulsa at or near the field at the moment. David, is there anything here in this Tulsa profile? Because I'm looking for it, and I don't find it. I like Houston a lot better with the win tonight than I like Tulsa – than I even like Tulsa.
They've been playing – they're in a stretch where they're playing really well for the most part. You know, they did have the rather decisive loss to Houston. I don't get what they're looking at either. I mean, there's nothing really at Tulane. A home win against UConn, which is okay, but, I mean, that in and of itself isn't enough to put them near the field. No, I don't understand why anyone – they're nowhere close to my field, I'll put it that way.
And the Wichita State win, Wichita State had its whole team heading into the game, but Van Vliet was already injured and hurting and missed most of that game. So, I mean, it was kind of a – you got to take that Wichita State win with a little grain of salt there as well.
Yeah.
And speaking of injuries, how happy must UConn must have been to get Amita Brima back in the lineup against South Florida?
Yeah, for that big rival. Is it South Florida or Central Florida? What's the big football?
I think it's Central Florida.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, the what do they? I don't remember what they call it. Central Florida made up some type of trophy, and
they showed up one day and without.
let's turn quickly to a couple other conferences. First of all, the Big East, John, Xavier with a pretty good week last week. Are you ready to put them on the 1-seed line? Because I know as of last week you weren't quite there yet on them.
Yeah, they've definitely earned their way up right now. I mean, they also had the win at DePaul after they spotted the Blue Demons 9 points.
Well, that does it right now.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you go to DePaul and win. Wow.
Yeah, no letdown after winning at Providence even. I mean, the coaches poll did put Xavier up to number 5 this week, but the media only bumped them up a single spot, even though they really love Maryland for some reason.
Yeah.
Yeah, and David, Villanova bounced back from their loss to Providence with a nice win at St. John's, have their trip to Providence coming up this weekend, so they get a quick chance for revenge 2 weeks after their loss.
Right. You know, Nova, again, I don't think they have the monster road win yet that Xavier has. I mean, the win at Butler was pretty good. And Seton Hall, I still think that there's room for them on the one line, but they're going to have to overtake Xavier to do it. If they go to Xavier and win, I think it kind of flips them back ahead of them. But, you know, Providence... are you a little bit floored by the fact that they're 6-0 on the road, and that includes some monster wins? They also have the neutral floor win over Arizona when Arizona was healthy. I realize that they've fallen off quite a bit since injuries, but 3 losses at home, and 2 of those are to Marquette and Seton Hall.
Yeah, if you go back to Villanova, I would argue their win at Seton Hall is looking a lot better than the win at Butler right now.
Yeah,
I'll agree that's better than the win at Butler. Where I will disagree with you, John, is I'm not overly thrilled with Seton Hall's profile yet. I don't think that this is a slam dunk tournament team at this point. Really, all they've done is beat Wichita State at home and the huge win at Providence, but they do have home loss to Creighton, a loss to GW, a loss to Long Beach. There's flaws on Seton Hall's profile that don't make them really solid-looking team that maybe you think they are.
The only flaw that I'm really not liking about Seton Hall is that loss against Long Beach. I mean, yes, they did lose at home to Creighton, but they also won at Creighton last weekend.
They got pounded at home by Creighton.
Yeah, but, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I still really like the win at Providence.
I agree. That win at Providence is huge, although everybody wins at Providence. They just can't be Providence
right
at home.
Yeah.
And I do like a win against Wichita where most of the Shockers were healthy.
Yeah.
David, how much trouble is Butler in?
A lot. I mean, they are 3-6 overall. And again, categorically, it's, you know, there's probably on average maybe just 1 or 2 teams, if that, every year that gets in below 500. And I think only once ever in the history of anything has a team been inside the bubble where they were more than 2 games below 500. Butler sitting
in
there.
In conference play.
In conference play, yes, yeah. Thank you. In conference play. Let me clarify that. They've lost 3 out of 4. Marquette. They really needed that one. Now, losing at Marquette in and of itself isn't bad, but it is when you look at 3 out of 4, 4 out of 6, and they really need to beat these non-tournament teams most of the time, and lately they're not even doing that. They played Creighton and Marquette, neither of whom I think is a tournament team, lost them both. Granted, it was on the road, but their next two, Georgetown at home, they need that one in the worst way. Then they go to St. John's. They need that one. That'll get them to 5-6. But it gets really hard after that because Seton Hall, Xavier, they got to somehow get, if they do not get to 8-10 and manage to win a game in the Big East tournament, which I think would get them to 9-11, I think they're in a ton of trouble. I'd be interested to hear your all's thoughts because, like me, you've studied the committee, guessed the committee. But, yeah, I think they really need to have a huge sense of urgency right now.
The interesting thing about Butler and Georgetown is if Butler wins, I would barely have them in the field for the time being. But if Georgetown wins this one, I think they take the Bulldogs' place. I know we've said many times that conferences don't get bids, but there's also a zero-sum effect where if Butler's not winning, someone else in the conference must be winning in their stead.
Yeah,
and that
I think I've got 2 teams I'm seriously looking at. This Georgetown team, but again, you look at those home losses to Radford and UNC Asheville, and you've got to really cringe at those.
Yeah.
Although that huge win at Xavier looks great on the top of their resume. But what about this Marquette resume? Doesn't have 2 stinkers, only has 1 with a DePaul loss, and has the win at Providence. If they can and they're going at to Seton Hall on Wednesday night. They win that game, I'm taking a real hard look at this Marquette team again. They would have had four wins in a row at that point as well.
You know, one of the things that really hangs me up on Marquette is their strength of schedule and their RPI. And I realize that that should not include or exclude a team in and of itself, but sub 100 RPI is pretty low. Sub 200, their strength of schedule out of conference was 280. And you just want to just shake these people. What are you doing scheduling Maine, Grambling, San Jose, Chicago State, Presby? I mean, they played six teams outside the top 300.
Now, David, they also just beat Stetson in a non-conference game this week, and Stetson is maybe the best team in the A-Sun after the win at North Florida tonight, so come on.
could someone explain that game to me? Explain scheduling Stetson in late January, please.
Marquette also goes to Xavier on Saturday, so maybe they're also hoping that they can catch the Musketeers looking ahead a bit to Creighton, but I don't think that's going to be very likely.
That may be too much, but they do have Providence coming up at home, Villanova and Georgetown at home still, a trip to Butler, so they have a chance to really push that RPI up if they can keep winning games.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if they win at Seton Hall, at Xavier, beat Providence at home and Creighton at home, and then go to DePaul and Creighton and win those.
You're talking every game.
If they win all the rest of their games, yeah, I'm right on board with them.
Much like Providence, I think they play their best ball in the conference away from home for some reason.
Let's quickly turn to the Big Ten. We're starting to run a little bit late on time. We've got a few things we've got to get through still here. But on the Big Ten, Maryland had one of the better weeks of anybody in the country with a home win over Iowa, then a nice road win at Ohio State. Ohio State, not a tournament team, but it is a road win, their second top 100 road win of the season. Finally gets a top, not only top 50, but a top 10 win. Is this enough to start considering Maryland at least a 2-seed, David, or do you still need to see more from them?
I mean, you can start considering them, but, I mean, they can't. The problem is they're not really – if they win at Purdue and then they hold serve and everybody else, yeah, I think then they belong on the 2-line. But they haven't really been winning the types of games that 2-seeds typically win other than beating Iowa at home.
I would not put them above Virginia, Kansas, or Michigan State quite yet. I mean, not just head-to-head with Sparty, but Michigan State also had some nice wins against, who was it, Providence, Kansas, and also Louisville at home.
The other team that I'm looking at here, and John, you mentioned that you're looking at them as well. What about Wisconsin? They have now won, I believe it's four straight games. Really a team that we had written off earlier this season with home losses to Western Illinois, Milwaukee, the loss at Northwestern even back on January 12th. Four straight wins since then, including Michigan State at home, Indiana at home, at Illinois over the weekend. Their next two, Ohio State and Nebraska at home, both very winnable. They win those two, David. I think there's a strong argument that Wisconsin belongs in the field.
If they win those two?
Just those two. At that point, a week from tonight, we can make an argument that this Wisconsin team could be in the field as of that point.
They win the two after that, yeah.
The two after that at Maryland, at Michigan State. They've also got at Illinois left. Let's say they win one out of those three, but they win the rest of their schedules. Home against Illinois, Michigan, at Minnesota. At that point in conference, they would be, I'm not that certain, they'd be 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. They'd have 11 conference wins. How can you got to take them seriously, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
They have to go to Illinois again?
Yeah.
Home against Illinois.
I was going to say, they just won at Illinois last night.
Yeah.
I think that this Wisconsin team is a team that could get back on the radar here. I'll put it that way.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the way they've been playing. But I don't think they're there yet. I think they need to do more than just beat two teams that have struggled on the road all year at home. But, all right.
Okay. Well, John, you're the one that brought up Wisconsin as well in our notes for tonight. You want to make the case for them?
Yeah, like I said, the only two teams in the Big Ten that have beaten them in Madison were Maryland and Purdue, and those are two of the top teams. So at least being able to beat Michigan State Indiana. It does put them at least in the top half of the Big Ten. Problem is, the bottom of the half of the Big Ten is looking almost like the Summit League at this point.
Yeah, that's fine. When I'm looking at the Big Ten, I had in my bracket this week six teams in. Nobody else other than a very brief look at Wisconsin even got considered. And you're right, they're looking like the Summit League or the top of Conference USA or maybe the bottom of Conference USA when you get to Rutgers in Minnesota. But
well, let's not be cruel.
Let's turn to the Big West Conference, or at least a conference that kind of looks a little bit worse than the Big West. That's the Mountain West. At this point, San Diego State now 9-0 in conference play. I really actually – they almost got into my field above the first four. They were very close to being at least in the middle of them in terms of where I ranked them. I did rank them just below the first four. But, David, San Diego State, if they win every game to the conference tournament championship game, you think they're in?
Yes, I do. I think they're in. Anything short of that, they're really going to be sweating. So – but yeah, if they and here's the thing: how many NIT teams are they even playing the rest of the way? Probably just one, and that's Boise at home. So
maybe UNLV at home. And they have a trip to Wyoming, and it's tough to win in Wyoming.
No, it's tough. But if they win out, and they are certainly good enough to win out, that's a testament to both how good San Diego State is and how weak the Mountain West is this year. I think they're in.
John, a new appearance in the top 25 this week in the coaches poll, not in the AP, but the St. Mary's Gales broke in at number 25. We know David doesn't believe in them, so that's why I want to throw it over to you. Is the St. Mary's team an at-large caliber team?
They have to, at a minimum, win the West Coast Conference regular season title, but even then, they're probably going to need at least one win against either Gonzaga or BYU.
Well, they've beaten both those teams once, both at home. They at BYU coming up Thursday night. The trip to Gonzaga is February 20th. I guess what you're saying is they need to split those two games at least.
Yeah, and also at least get to the West Coast Conference championship game. I don't think the semifinal is going to be enough.
Yes, I would like to address St. Mary's if I could. Okay. Let's address St. Mary's by addressing Pacific, their most recent opponent. Pacific has won four Div 1 games. One of those was a one-point win at home against Santa Clara. Another was a two-point win at home against San Diego. Another was a two-point win on the road against Loyola. And, you know, the other one was a nine-point win against Port. So, essentially, they are 6 points away from having just one win this year. This past weekend, they led St. Mary's for about 36 minutes of that game. St. Mary's had to really sweat it out. It came down to the final minute. The game still wasn't decided. But St. Mary's got the win. And I guess the voters were so impressed with how they barely beat Pacific that they put them into the rankings. I am not buying St. Mary's at all.
I agree with you. We've got a St. Mary's team that's 18-2, somehow got voted in. We've got an Arkansas Little Rock team that's 19-2 and wasn't even anywhere near the top 25. I'll take that Little Rock profile over St. Mary's any day.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you look at St. Mary's, though, obviously they only have two losses at Cal, one bad loss at Pepperdine, four top 100 wins all at home. Stanford, Irvine, BYU, and Gonzaga, none of which may make the field unless Irvine wins the Big West tournament.
Well, yeah. St. Mary's 8-2 against teams with winning records, and you know, maybe one of those wins came against maybe a tournament team.
Yeah. Well, other than those four wins that I mentioned, their next best win was Cal State Bakersfield. Now, no offense to the Roadrunners, who have one of my least favorite home courts in the country. Yeah, that's not the type of win that you need to make the NCAA tournament, and not when your other wins are – you don't have a top 50 win. It kind of reminds me almost a little bit of the Clemson profile we discussed earlier, but Clemson's wins are all top 50 wins, not 51 to 100 wins.
Right.
That's why I like the Clemson profile over this profile where all your wins are outside of the 150 yeah. except for the big ones.
Yeah, and I hate to say this because I'm an under-the-radar guy, and I'm an under-the-radar guy that kind of has a soft spot for Murray State. The inclusion of St. Mary's isn't as outrageous as Murray State getting into the rankings last year, but it's pretty close. They are the no one has been less deserving of a ranking than them that actually got it.
But I think you've also said many times before the rankings usually represent who are the hottest teams in the
right.
country,
yeah.
not necessarily the best.
Well, yeah, and yeah, they got it done at Pacific.
Let's briefly mention this Gonzaga team as well. 1-3 straight now, all against the same garbage out in the West Coast Conference. They've got a stretch of 4 straight road games starting this week at Loyola Marymount, at Pepperdine, at Portland. Then coming up February 13th at SMU, which may not even be as impressive of a win if they get it now that SMU also has the loss to Houston tonight. But
yeah, but they're still unbeaten.
Is this now a must-win, that SMU game, if they want to get an at-large bid?
I think so.
And the problem with Houston earlier tonight is now the SMU game is being watered down a little bit. Yeah, but at the same time, they better not overlook the landmine that is Pepperdine, which already blew up in the Gales' faces earlier this year.
Right.
Yeah. Let's quickly one last team here, David, Wichita State.
Yeah.
With a real nice win at Evansville over this weekend, pretty much killing off Evansville's at-large chances at this point. But the Shockers have now won every game in conference and puts them at 11 straight wins overall, one of the longest winning streaks in the country right now.
Right.
Just how good is this Wichita State team?
Very. They're way better than their paper. I know their paper is weak. The team is very good. This is a team that was in the Sweet 16 last year that has a lot of people back. And they haven't just been winning their games. And I realize that there's no tournament caliber teams here, but they've been blowing past people. I mean, the only team that really made them sweat was Evansville, and they returned the favor by going to Evansville and just blowing their doors off. I know Evansville closed it up a little at the end, but Wichita looked really impressive. We're going to turn back the clock maybe too far, but I believe it was 2003. Something very similar happened with Tulsa. Tulsa had been in the round of 32 the year before. I think they lost in overtime. They returned just about everybody. They had gotten ranked really high. They went through a period where they had injuries and suspensions, and like Wichita State, they lost a lot of games. I think they went through a stretch of losing 4 or 5. They got the automatic bid, and they were on the 13 line, and they just blew up the 4 seed because they were on the 13 line because their paper was bad, but their team was not. I think this Wichita State team is capable of going to the Sweet 16.
Yeah, that was 2003 because Tulsa beat Dayton in Spokane that year.
Yeah.
And you compare like the Wichita State to we're just talking about that St. Mary's resume. That I mean, Wichita State does have the home win over Utah that St. Mary's doesn't have, but they really don't have any other quality wins either. But Wichita State, first of all, does have a lot of wins in that 101 to 150 range.
Yeah.
That at least help build up your streak, the schedule. They are not – it's not easy to win at Northern Iowa. It's not easy to win at Southern Illinois.
Yeah,
it's not easy to even get a home win over UNLV.
Easy to win at Pacific.
It's very easy to win at Pacific, exactly. And the other thing that when you look at this Wichita State profile is exactly, you know, when you see them on the court, they're that good. They've got 3 losses that have asterisks next to them, the USC, Alabama, and Iowa losses because they were not at full strength. Even the Tulsa loss. Really, yeah. I'd say there's only the Seton Hall loss was at full strength. And even then, they were just starting to get the whole team back together again and playing well together. I agree with you. I really like this Wichita State profile. And they may end up down on, you know, I think I had them on the 8 line. I think they probably end up on the 6 or the 7 line by the end of the day if they keep winning.
Yeah.
Even that may be a crime because this may be a 3 or 4 seed caliber team that ends up down on the 6 line and blows up a 3 seed in the second round.
Yeah,
and we did have a discussion about this earlier. I think our consensus was we're not necessarily going to penalize them for those 3 losses, but we can't just assume they would be winning games down in Florida if they were healthy either. So we have to make that distinction.
You do. It's just an interesting question, and I realize that we're short on time, but it isn't so much do you reward them or penalize them as it is the rest of the field. I mean, if you put this Wichita team on the 10-11, how does that make the sixth seed feel? That earned a protected seed, that earned the right to have a play, to have an 11 seed profile that's actually a top 25 caliber team. How do you feel if you're the sixth seed and you see your name called and you're playing Wichita State?
Exactly. So that's why I think that Wichita State may get that bump up from the committee, because I think the committee is going to recognize that, yeah, this is a lot better team than a five-loss team. This is probably the equivalent of about a three-loss team right here that has five losses.
Yeah, and if I'm a team like Duke or Kentucky or even Dayton, I would not be pleased to see the Rockets opposite of me in the tournament.
Yeah. But I guess on that note here, we have gone through all the teams, and let me turn to both of you for any final thoughts. John, let me start with you.
I think I've said all that I need to earlier, so I'm not going to add anything else.
David, your turn.
I was going to say this final thought for this week, but I'll do it twice. We are 1 week away from college basketball being the major sport. Suddenly arenas that haven't been all the way full will be full. The attention on it will be at a maximum, and I love it. I love this time of year between the Super Bowl and March Madness. I love it so much, and I know I harp on this. I wish we could find a way to get a brighter spotlight on this sport for a longer period of time. What happens in November and December is highly important. It shapes the rest of the season and where we are now. And I just think we need to do something to get more of a focus on it is a whole season. It starts at the beginning. Everyone starts out at zero. It's all important.
Just my final thought here before we head off. As we mentioned earlier, Florida State, as we were recording this, was blowing out NC State. As we record right now, NC State has just cut it to a two-point game with a shot to cut it to one at the free throw line.
Poor
Florida State needs to get to the doctor. That's all I can say. On that note, have a great night, everybody.